another Cake Wolf happy hour.
I am your host, Cake Wolf, and I am joined here with Cake Bitch.
I was really hoping you'd continue that.
I'm not going to do that the whole time.
Oh, man.
So, today, as always, for this 31 Days of Halloween, we are covering the show Monsters. Ran from the late 80s to early 90s. We're covering all 72 episodes on this 31-day extravaganza. That's how the Resurrection of Zombie 7 says it, extravaganza.
Yeah, well, you pronounce zebra zebra, so.
So today we're covering three episodes, 14, 15, and 16. And if you want to see our cocktail that we made for this extravaganza, check out cakewolf.com. Go there and feel free to hit us up at kingcakewolf@gmail.com. If you have any comments, whatnots, whatever, about, I don't know, anything that comes out of our mouths, you're free to contact us there and we'll speak your words on the cast.
No negative Nancys.
I don't care. I actually look forward to...
You look forward to the hate mail?
Yeah.
I burn it.
It keeps me going.
Yeah.
Yep.
I print it out and I burn it in a fire.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I don't. I like to keep it. It makes me feel warm and fuzzy. So, we're going to just go right ahead and dig into this. We're starting off with Parents from Space. This episode aired on February 11th of 1989. This one has a director going by the name of Gerald Kotz. It's got some writers in here. Peg Haler, Bob Schneider. Not really gonna dig into anything about those people because they didn't really do too much of horror to note besides some other episodes of Monsters and some episodes of Tales from the Dark Side. Tales from the Dark Side ran right before Monsters did, where the year that ended, this show Monsters kicked it off. So, it's got a lot of the same people that they're working with, and if you want to know a little bit more about that and the history of Monsters, check out our first show on October 1st. Paddedroom.podbean.com is where you can find that bastard. So, yeah. That's our dog, Nolly, freaking out, chasing the cat around, and that'll be happening probably continuously for the rest of my life. Yeah.
She doesn't want the cat to be in the same room as her for some reason tonight.
This stars Frank Gorshin, and he is quite the prolific actor. He's been in a ton of stuff. However, it's all stuff that is too early for my taste. I am not familiar with most of it. I know that he directed a movie called The Best of Frank Gorshin, so I don't know what that's all about.
That seems Trumpian.
Not sure what that's all about. Also stars Peggy Cass, Mary Griffin, and Anne Hillary. So Mary Griffin plays as Cindy, and she's a little girl that's living with the Ellers, which are portrayed by Frank Gorshin and Peggy Cass. The Ellers are kind of shitty. They're not very good people. They really treat Cindy like she's garbage. So the show starts off with Cindy and the Ellers being visited by Miss Rogers, who is a caseworker. It seems as though the Ellers are looking to adopt Cindy, but not because they love her. It's strictly for the monies. So what's going on here is a whole bunch of lies, and we know that Cindy has recently obtained a hamster as a pet. When Miss Rogers leaves, what's going on with this little pet of hers? Well, it's, I guess, being a nuisance to Ward Ellers. And so he takes the cage and he smashes it on the ground, killing the poor little animal. Yeah, so not very good parents there. There's a light and some noises and a whole bunch of crashing sounds coming from outside. And the Ellers go out there to check it out. And while that's going on, I'm going to ask you, Christina, what did you think about this episode?
What is their last name? Ellers.
Mm-hmm.
The Ellers are not supposed to be likable, so they do this really well.
Mm-hmm.
there's a line in it where June is saying that Ward told her that having a foster kid would be like having a live-in maid.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that level of awfulness. It's very believable in that sense that it shouldn't happen, but you know it does. And the foster care person that comes to follow up with them, she is completely oblivious and clueless. She has to follow up with them because the girl has bruises on her because they're abusive assholes. And, the foster lady can't even get Cindy's name right. She calls her Kathy and Candy. I know those are two names that she threw at her.
Yeah, she's pretty oblivious to everything. She's just living in this land of rose-colored glasses.
Yep.
La Vie en Rose.
She did not want to find anything bad happening, so she didn't.
Nope. So, yeah. So, what's going on here is, basically, we've got the Ellers going into their shed, and in the shed, there's a couple of giant rat monsters. They have red glowing eyes, sharp talons, they're very furry, and look creepy as shit. That's the last thing that they get to see. So, the Ellers come back inside, and at this point, we've got Cindy preparing a meal for them. They sit down and start chowing in, and Cindy apologizes, saying that she is sorry that the food is a little bit cold, and they don't seem to care. They just chow down. Mr. Ellers, he finds a worm in his broccoli, and so Cindy cringes, expecting to get beat. But, Mr. Ellers doesn't seem to care. He eats that and asks her to go find more.
He's delighted.
Mm-hmm. So something strange is going on here. We find out that the parents are actually in the barn, locked away inside of the bodies of these rat monsters. And as the girl sees the rat monsters in the barn, she freaks out. And the parents have to confront her and tell her what's going on. So they have this device that allows them to transfer bodies as well as disintegrate stuff and do all kinds of other groovy things. They have a broken spaceship and they've swapped bodies with her adopted parents in order to fix their ship and exist in our climate that is inhabitable to them for extended periods of time. Through this time with these aliens, Cindy grows to love them. And so at the point where it comes when they can't fix their ship and they tell Cindy that they're going to have to be disintegrated and she's going to have to take control of this device and put her parents back in their proper bodies, Cindy doesn't go that route. She says, fuck that, and she decides to disintegrate the parents' bodies, the parents in the rat bodies, and just let her new parents, her alien parents, take control of those nice little flesh-baggy humans' bodies and raise her from here on. And that's pretty much where we're ending it, on a happy note, where the caseworker comes, says that the adoption went through swimmingly, and the parents are happy, Cindy's happy, and
the house is in complete chaos.
It is. It's in complete shambles.
There's, like, graffiti of a rat on the wall.
No, it's actually graffiti showing a giant cat head.
Oh,
and then,
it's a cat head, and yeah, they have it crossed out. That's right.
Yeah, and then they got the big slash through it saying, like, no
dirty,
cats.
Everything's dirty, and this foster woman just shows up, and she's like, something's different. You moved the rug, didn't you? And, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. They've got a table full of foods, tons of cheese, and, like, cereal, and
donuts.
Cake, and donuts.
There's donuts.
Yeah, so they're chowing down and having a grand old time, and Cindy's happy as a pig and shit. I should mention, also, kind of glazed by it, but the rat parents also brought her hamster back to life.
Oh, yes.
Because they can do that.
Yep, they're aliens. They can do whatever they want.
So, yeah, I think that was a really badass episode. I love the monsters when you do get to see them. It's very quick, but they are worth it for when what time they are in there. And I would say that they're a strong three. They look good.
Yeah, I'd give them like 3.5. They were kind of freaky at first, but then when they were just disabled in the barn, they were kind of cute because they weren't moving around. And I don't know, but I liked the monsters, and I liked this episode.
Yeah, me too. Definitely. Other media where you're going to find rat monsters, I'd like to throw out a movie that's called Altered Species, and it has a secondary title, Rodents, with a Z instead of an S. This is a 2001 B-minus masterpiece of shit.
B-minus masterpiece?
B-minus masterpiece of shit. It's,
Why does that lady look familiar?
It's pretty god-awful, but it's definitely worth checking out. Also, if you haven't seen Willard or Big Ben, I know that they recently, well, not recently, I think it was back in the early 2000s, remade Willard. Definitely check those out. Basically, you got a dude that has psychic powers. He can control rats, and he's not the most happy dude, so he uses the rats to do his dirty deeds. It's good fun. The sequel to it, Big Ben, kind of takes a different spin and is much less horror and more just like, I don't know, Homeward Bound with rats. But anyway, yeah, I would say that this doesn't really need anything changed to it. Would you change anything?
No, I wouldn't change anything, but I feel that we should point out that there is a little bit of an existential crisis at the end, at least in my mind. I'm rooting for this little girl to, like, just annihilate her now rat-shaped parents because they're awful people.
Right.
But at the same time, these rat-shaped people, they just want to die because they're not going to see their grandbabies anymore and stroke their whiskers and all that. Feels kind of selfish, but I can't say I blame the little girl for being like, no, you're going to live with me now.
I don't blame the little girl. Those parents were abusive, and you don't know how bad it could have got, or it was.
Like, yeah. Oh, no. I know. I don't blame her. It just, you know, there was that little bit of bittersweet
for me. Well, I think that people that abuse children definitely deserve to be devoured by rats, or have rats take their bodies and put them to good use.
Yeah, they should have eaten the parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
Something awful. Something awful needs to happen to people that abuse children. Yeah, so I would say that this would work as a movie, I think, if you just expand on everything that's already there. I feel like the structure of the story is already very strong,
mm-hmm.
So if you just lengthen it, I think you can have something special there.
Yeah, not like a 2-hour movie. This would not be expanded into one of those epics that they've been doing lately, but like your typical hour and a half. Especially because it's like a kid's story. This girl gets basically like every kid's dream. She gets to eat donuts for breakfast. And
this could definitely, I agree, cake. This could definitely work for a Disney Channel movie or anything of that sort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This would be a fun one.
Yeah. And you could still have the monsters look creepy as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I was thinking here too, I would love to know what happens to a lot of these props from these shows. There's so many monsters. I know a lot of them get repurposed, but I imagine not all of them do. And I would love to own some of these monsters.
You want to buy one of the rats?
I would love to have the rats. Yeah. Wow.
First, we need to buy you an entire house to put all your things in.
All my rat monsters. yeah, I don't think this is scary at all. I think it's got a lot of levity to it, and it's scary maybe at the beginning when the kid's, you know, getting abused by the parents, but beyond that, is there a lesson here?
Aliens are better than humans always.
Yeah. I think the lesson here is definitely do not abuse children. That's
another solid lesson to
You will be harshly punished by them if...
You will be placed in the rat body and then nixed.
I mean, yeah, they call it nixing. So basically, I think the message here is if you take advantage of your position, you're abusing a child. When that child has the power in their hands, you want to make sure that they're going to use it for something that benefits you. rather than something that can potentially destroy you.
Yes, it's make sort sure of you like, manipulate those kids.
It's sort of like an allegory for you have, you know, a child, you're going to want to treat them right because when they get older, they're going to have the power and you're going to be as powerless as the child once was.
Cycle of life.
Right. So you're going to want to make sure that they put you somewhere nice or take care of you somehow instead of just throwing you to the curb. And that's basically what we got here. I would say that this is a strong episode. I would give this one a 4.
This one was really fun. I think I'd give it a 4, too.
Okay, yeah.
4.2? No, just a 4.
4.2, that's weird. So we're going to move on to the next one here. Next one we got is called Mother's Instinct, The Mother Instinct. And this is, this aired on February 18th of 1989. And this is episode 15. The director here is Bette Gordon. And the writer is D. Emerson Smith. Again, both of them did works on Tales from the Dark Side and, you know, other episodes of Monsters, but not beyond that, nothing to take note of in horror that I want to really dig into. We've got actors Elizabeth France here, who plays as the mother, Finn Carter, who plays as Sheila, and Tom Gilroy, who plays as Nelson. Just going to touch on Finn Carter here. The most thing to take note of here is she played Rhonda LeBeck in Tremors, which, if my memory serves proper, she was the love interest to Mr. Bacon.
No.
Yep, Mr.
Not even 7 degrees there.
Mr. Kevin Bacon. Yeah, so that apparently there's going to be a TV series of Tremors coming up to follow in sync with a 6th movie.
Are they bringing
franchise.
Kevin Bacon back? Because he's like ageless.
I don't know if he's going to be in the 6th movie, but I think he's going to be in the 6th movie. I don't know if he's going to be in the show or vice versa. I could have it wrong. I don't know. Not sure there. Anyway, yeah, so that's Finn Carter for you. Tom Gilroy, who plays as Nelson, as I said, he's been in a shitload of stuff. He's all over the place, and I'm sure you've seen him somewhere on TV. He's got a very memorable face to him, mainly because of his annoying unibrow that's ever present.
Yeah, he doesn't pull it off as well as Frida does.
So what we have here is basically Nelson and Sheila are visiting Sheila's mother, and she's a bit of a botanist. She has her own little greenhouse, and she's cooking up some melons around her greenhouse, as well as a ton of other plants. And she's making shakes out of the melons. And I guess melon shakes could be pretty good. I've never had a melon shake before.
I mean, I think it would be pretty delightful.
Yeah, I can't say I've ever had one. Strawberry banana, I've had that. I've had coconut.
I think I've had smoothies with, like, watermelon in it.
I haven't even had that.
Oh, well, I mean, I can't imagine that a melon smoothie would taste bad unless it's, like, honeydew.
It made me thirsty for a melon smoothie. So I think if you
cantaloupe
make...
would probably be weird.
You make a cocktail for this one, it's gotta be a melon smoothie, right?
Or melon liquor.
Or melon liquor. We have Midori. So basically she's doing that, and we find out very quickly that Nelson is a bit of a shit. He's only there to bug the mother for money, and the mother doesn't want to give any more money to Nelson or her daughter Sheila. She does want to take care of Sheila, and she loves Sheila, and it's obvious there. The writing and the acting show that there's a great love of the mother and the daughter. However, there's a lot of issues with Nelson. You see that Sheila has a bruise across her face. Nelson is a bit of a bastard. He beats her. He physically, emotionally, and verbally abuses her, and pretty much threatens the mother that if the mother does not give money to them for his gambling debts that he's racked up, and he's racked up over $8,000 of them, then he's going to make sure the daughter pays. This pisses off the mother, And she says, how dare you threaten my daughter? The daughter tries to get in the way of them to, you know, make some, like, nice air in between because it's getting pretty hot. And Nelson backhands Sheila. Well, the mother gets all fired up from this. And throughout this whole point, she's been in a wheelchair. Well, she jumps up from the wheelchair at this moment. And she one-handed, like Mike Myers, pins Nelson to the fucking wall and lifts him up, choking him out, and just telling him how it is. Never threaten my daughter or I will kill you.
It's like what every woman wishes they could do.
So we find out that she's got some abnormal strength here, and she admits that it's from the melon shakes. So this gives Nelson an idea. Of course, because he's a douche, he decides to steal some of the melons and make his own. Well, that night when him and Sheila go into the garden while the mother's asleep so that they can steal some melons, Nelson gets a bit of a surprise. There's some weird worms that look just like Tremors, fitting because Sheila is from Tremors, and these worms, they're about the size of, like, a grown man's arm.
Yeah.
They jump up and just start biting Nelson all over the place, so he's not going to be getting any melons tonight. And I'm going to skip by a little bit and ask you, Christina, what you thought of this episode.
Well, I just realized now that they must have been on, like, an abuse streak here because of two back-to-back episodes.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Freaking abusive assholes.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought this episode was well done. The mother was clearly the best actor of mm-hmm. the three. The monster, well, we'll talk about the monster later, but I thought it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, so going into spoilers here, what's happening is, geez, Nelson basically goes back to Sheila and tells her that she's got to really get her mom in on this this deal of a lifetime opportunity of, you know, selling the melon enzymes to the masses and making a whole bunch of dough. So Sheila approaches her mom and talks to her about it. Part of the reason why she's got to talk to the mom as well is so that they can find out, like, how to make the melons and whatever. And so, anyway, the mother tells her daughter that it's the worms that are actually responsible for the melon juice, not the melons themselves. The worms are a rare African breed of bloodworms that can alter the genetic code of any plant that it's near. So now Nelson knows that, because he was peeping in on the whole conversation, he knows that he needs to get the worms, not the melons. And so he decides to, that night, go and get some worms. And he manages to get some because he drinks some of the melon shake to power himself up. Makes him pretty strong. He takes some of the worms, throws them in a briefcase. And then he pushes Sheila and tells Sheila he doesn't need her anymore now that he knows the secret. He's going to make his own powerful melons. The mother comes in and Sheila is all broken up and sad. And the mother says, I knew that you were going to do this, Nelson. I told my daughter what I did because I expected this to happen. I don't blame my daughter. She is too weak to stand up to a monster like you. And I should have raised her better by giving her more attention and showing her how to be more independent. Well, Nelson doesn't give a fuck. He's like, well, I really don't care. I'm going to go now. Bye.
I'm out of here.
And she says, you don't get it, Nelson. You're not going away with some bloodworms. You're going away with some babies. And the mother's instinct is something that you should never mess with. And so he's like, well, what the hell are you talking about? As this giant worm,
mama worm to the rescue,
looks like looks like a legit tremor, except way hairier. And it pops out of the melon patch and just devours Nelson up. Eats him completely. Head to toe.
Yes.
So I think the monster in this one is fucking badass.
I liked it.
I love Tremors, so I love this monster. I think it looked really cool. It had all of these weird pubis-like hairs coming off of it. And it had this almost leech-like face with all of these suction teeth.
Yeah, it was very teethy.
Yeah.
Toothy?
Yeah.
Toothy.
Yeah, I'd give this one a 4. I liked it.
I'd give it a 4.5 because I thought it was kind of, like, it would have scared me.
Okay.
Like, 20 years ago.
I like worm monsters. In other media, you want some worm monsters. There's plenty out there. Of course, all of you should have probably heard of Slither and Night of the Creeps. Those are some fantastic horror movies. There's also Slugs from 1988, which has a great dinner scene where a dude's head explodes and a bunch of slugs just go everywhere in this fancy restaurant. So gotta love some slugs. Of course, Tremors as well. Can't forget Tremors.
Or you could just watch a documentary about parasites, because that's some horrible shit right there, too.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah, there's this one parasite I heard of once. There's this archaeologist that was discovering this new tomb, and some dust fell on her head in one of the chambers where they were placing, what are they called? Sarcophagi.
Okay.
And so she goes throughout her days normally, and she keeps feeling for a few weeks this weird sensation throughout her scalp. So she goes and looks in the mirror often, and she's like, you know, parting her hair to look in her scalp, and she sees these little things pop out from her head and then pop back down like whack-a-moles.
That's so gross.
So she goes to the doctor, and he looks at her scalp and sees these things pop up. They have to shave her head and wait for these things to pop out for air. They're a parasite that lives in her scalp. It's this new breed of parasitic worm that no one knew about. And
it's
so
the Pharaoh's
they
curse.
Wait. Yeah, so they wait for these things to pop out, and then they grab them with tweezers and pluck them. Really weird.
You keep telling me that story, and it doesn't get any better.
Nope, that's the Pharaoh's curse right there. You're right. So would you change anything for this one?
Well, the acting, I think I would have gotten more believable actors. Like, her daughter takes a little too far. She's a little too easy to manipulate. She's like every abuser's dream girlfriend. And
I've dated women
me.
Like this.
Really?
I've dated women like this.
I feel like they don't exist, but I guess they do.
I've dated two women like this.
They just do whatever you say?
Yeah, basically.
Ugh, so gross.
I could tell
I
you
know.
Stories.
I feel like it wasn't believable, but apparently maybe it is. I guess I give women too much credit.
One of them let me dress up like an alien and have a little role play with that.
Wow.
I dressed her up like a hooker, and she had, like, you know, messy makeup and all this and that, and looked real skanky. We picked out some nice, nasty outfits in, like, the Halloween section of Goodwill. It was just, like, totally tramped out. And then I had this really big alien head on and a monk's robe. Yeah.
But I don't think that puts you at the same level as a guy who's beating his wife around.
No.
That's like, okay, weirdo,
but,
you want to do some weird kink things.
Well, yeah,
whatever.
I'm into some weird stuff. But, like, there was no questioning it. It was just like, sure, well, I'll do whatever. And she had, like, issues with guys in the past. Well, they both did, that were very abusive. So
you just seemed like so much better that they were like, yeah, go along with this.
I guess, yeah. I mean, all I wanted was some weird sex things. Yeah.
Just for the record, he has never dressed like that for our sex things.
Okay.
I made him uncomfortable.
But, Yeah, where was I? Would this work as a movie?
I think you probably could expand upon it if you had more solid actors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the mother was very good. The other ones, I mean, they weren't terrible, but I don't know if you could expand it into a movie with mediocre actors.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's room for expansion, like, finding out, learning more about this abusive relationship, and then finding out, like, expanding how long it takes for them to learn that it's the worms and not the melons.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think you could probably make this into a movie.
Possibly. I could see it working as, like, a Roger Corman thing or a Full Moon thing. I think that's about the extent of it. But I think it works better as this short. This is how I like this kind of story, I think. I don't really want to see it expanded.
You could do, like, a made-for-TV movie.
Sure, yeah.
Like, then it could be much shorter, too.
Well, a lot of ideas like this get expanded on in the Full Moon, during the Full Moon movies. Like, there's so many Full Moon movies that could work as 20-minute episodes. But, you know, they expand on them to the nth degree. I think that doesn't... Right, that's not how it is for all Full Moon movies, and I do love a lot of Full Moon movies. I love the Decadent Evil series, and of course Puppet Master, a ton of them. But yeah, there's plenty that just feel like they could work in the vein of like a 20-minute horror anthology, and I feel like this works just fine where it is.
Yeah, it works.
Is it scary? I don't think so. You thought the worm was a little bit scary.
I thought the worm was a little bit scary. The episode overall, like, the scariest part was the fact that this guy is so freaking abusive.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, overall, the scare factor is pretty low.
So would you say there's a lesson here?
Don't be an abusive asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah, or you'll get eaten by a giant worm.
Yeah, I think there's also a lesson to pay attention to your youth if you've got a child. Because you want to make sure that you're giving them the proper attention and the necessary tools that they need to survive in life. And the mother did admit that she did not do that for her daughter.
Well, she felt she didn't.
Right.
And I guess they went into the details where the mother and father were both older, like middle-aged, when they had her. And they were very into their work. And
he was into bugs and she was into plants.
Yeah, and they kind of ignored. I think they were professors or something.
Yeah.
So she was just kind of in the background growing up and didn't get a lot of parental attention.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily turn you into a ninny.
You know, we're a product of our environment, and there's so many things to take into consideration that make an adult the person that they become, that they are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Perfect Storm made her that way, and the mother finds what she claimed to be a large contributor to it, the lack of attention. And, you know, who are we to say otherwise?
I mean, the mother obviously feels some guilt.
I feel like that's part of the lesson, though, to give your children a proper attention and give them the tools necessary to survive
against
the monsters that they can come across.
The real life monsters, because, other people.
Well, yeah, I think they're the scariest monsters.
Yeah,
and I would not want to be in a situation like Sheila was with that guy.
Yeah, he was kind of weird looking, too. I don't know.
The unibrow just doesn't do it. What would you rate this?
The episode, I think I would give it a 3.5.
I was going 3.5. Yeah,
yeah,
I think so. So we'll move on to the next one here. We've got Their Divided Self. And this one aired on February 25th of 1989. This one is directed by Frank De Palma and written by Michael Bishop. It stars David L. Lander as James Self, Keith McKechnie as Robert Self, Karen Haber as Elegie Kaiser, Ide Bride as Velma, and Rich Hall as Dr. Blackman. The only one I want to take note of here is David L. Lander, and he hasn't been in horror that I can see, but he's so memorable. When you see him, you'll know you've seen him somewhere. And I think the most iconic role that you're going to be seeing him from is from Laverne and Shirley, where he played, what was his name, Squiggy?
Squiggs? It's been so long since I watched that
the
show.
The Squigster or something like that.
I used to watch it to fall asleep.
Yeah, he's got
Remember
a very...
Nick at Night?
He's got a very iconic look to him. Yeah, Nick at Night, yep. So this one is basically showing this doctor. He's a psychiatrist, and he's showing up at this mansion, and he's being led by this little tart who is concerned about her husbands. Yep, husbands, plural. So basically what's going on here is her husbands are a pair of conjoined twins by the name of James and Robert Self. And the psychiatrist is there to try and help this little love triangle situate itself. And, well, basically, the psychiatrist grew up watching the Selfs at a very young age as entertainers on television. They had to become entertainers in order to marry Ella G. Kaiser, who is the young tart that brought the doctor there. She fell in love with them on first sight, but wanted them to kind of like have their own way in the world, because the way that the Selfs were raised, they were adopted by a very rich man, and when he died, they inherited all of his monies. So they grew up basically rich and had everything fed to them on a silver spoon, which wasn't the case for Ella G., so she wanted to make sure that there was more to their life than just her. So they became entertainers, and they had their own shtick, and they ended up marrying Ella G. But now that they're out of the entertainment business, they're finding it very hard to get along with one another, and it's hurting the relationship that they have with their wife. So the psychiatrist basically does a lot of wordplay with them and tries to dig into the core problem of their issue. What did you think about this episode, Christina?
I didn't like this one.
You did not?
No, I was really bored by it.
Okay.
I know you liked it more than I did.
Was there a problem with the acting or the storytelling?
Well, I thought the story itself was kind of dull. Like, just making a joke about a conjoined twin for a full 22 minutes just got old really fast.
All right. I didn't mind it. It wasn't my favorite, and I didn't think it was spectacular. But it wasn't shit, and it told the story that it wanted to tell in a very digestible manner.
It wasn't as bad as Rouse Him Not.
No.
But I would say it's the second worst that we've talked about so far.
I would disagree. So, basically, what's going on here, digging into spoilers, is, so they end up trying to, since they can't verbally work through their problems because they keep calling each other names and this and that, the doctor tells them to try and work it out non-verbally. And their answer to that is to punch and choke each other out, which freaks out Ella G, and she leaves. She tells them that she's always going to love them, but she's peacing out. So she goes. And what's going on from there is the doctor, he tells them to, sleep it off, relax, blah, blah, blah. They have a nanny that takes care of them. Her name is Velma, played by Ide Bird. And she's basically telling them their breathing exercise that they have to do when they get too upset. And they're two minds controlling one set of lungs, et cetera, et cetera. So if they're getting too excited and fighting each other, they could die. So once they're in bed and they're all calmed down, the doctor's there and he's talking to them about ways that they can work through their issues, and ends up letting it slip that he plans on writing a book about them. Like, that's why he's there. He's not there to charge them. He's there to, basically, for personal gain. And this doesn't settle well with the Selfs, so they basically pick him up, throw him around, strangle him, treat him like a rag doll, and then toss him off of the balcony. And, yeah, so Doctor is dead. They feel completely at one with the world, completely at peace. Turtle doves and flower pots, they're happy as pigs and shit. They go downstairs, they start playing the piano, and Velma starts having a tirade with them. She says, "You motherfuckers, all you do is kill people."
She doesn't say motherfuckers, well, because it was on TV.
She basically gets pissed at them because this is their thing. Now that they're out of the entertainment business, they're basically having arguments with each other, and then the only way that they can work through their issues is by murdering someone. And they don't seem to care because they say, well, famous people don't go to jail. The other people go to jail, not famous people, so they don't have to worry about it. And, yeah, they're playing the piano all fine and dandy while Velma yells at them, and it pans outside to where the doctor fell, and it's just showing all of these bodies out there that have been buried, like tons and tons of them. So, yeah, that's it. That's your episode there.
I think probably the only good line in this is when the doctor says that he wants to write a book and it'll be a bestseller, they look at each other and say, "He's more two-faced than we are."
Yeah.
But bum.
Yeah, there's a lot of shtick in here. Right down to the point where when they're throwing the doctor around like a rag doll, they got cartoon swoosh and boink noises in place.
You know what? I don't like Three Stooges either, and I think it was very similar humor to a point. Maybe that's why bores me too.
Well, I've seen all of the Three Stooges episodes like so many times, and I will tell you, it is not like that humor.
No, nope. Oh, okay. Three Stooges
is extremely refined comedy.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I'm gonna have to show you some soon.
Ugh.
We'll have to watch it now.
Now maybe it will look good compared to this episode.
Well, they're not comparable. Three Stooges is fucking amazing.
All right.
You got this one episode where they're like cavemen and they have this reverse role.
What is it with you and the cavemen stories?
Where they have this reverse role where they're like the bitches of the tribe. And the women hit them over the head and drag them into the cave. And they don't really want this stuff. They want to, like, get away and be men and be free. But the women keep bonking them on the head and dragging them back for sex. Yeah, it's good stuff. It's refined humor. There's a lot to it. You just don't have the palate, okay? You're not able to enjoy those subtle tones of comedy.
It's not subtle.
Whatever.
Women bonking men over the head and dragging them back to the cave to have sex with them.
This is irrelevant.
Not refined.
Irrelevant. So, would you change anything in this?
Everything. I didn't like it.
Okay, well, so you would just say that it didn't exist?
Yeah.
Just take it out?
I wouldn't make it.
That's what you would change? You would erase it all?
Yeah, I would erase it from history.
All right. I think it's fine. It's serviceable for what it is, and it conveys the story that they want to convey. I feel like what they could have done to strengthen it is the psychiatrist really hams it up with his acting, and I like that. I feel like they could have hammed it up with everyone else as well and make it more of a slapstick. Because that's the feel like I feel this story was going for. And at points, they nailed it, but it wasn't consistent throughout. And I feel like that could have been more of a consistent flow of slapstick. Now, this wasn't scary. I think we can both agree on that.
No.
In other media, where you're going to find, like, weirdo
circus freaks.
Yeah, like
decided
circus freaks. Basically, you got, of course, you got Todd Browning's freaks. There's also Freaked, I believe it's called, from 1993, which is a very weird movie about circus freaks that I feel like everybody needs to watch. It has these Rastafarian giant eyeballs in it that are just fucking amazing. It's got a bearded woman, and I think it's actually played by Mr. T, who plays the bearded woman. It's got a dude that's part cow, part man. It's got a giant larval grub monster, and it has conjoined twins. So, can't go wrong with Freaked in 1993. Definitely check that out. Yeah, so what would you say the lesson is for this?
Meh.
No lesson at all?
No, I don't feel like there is one. Basically, they get away with murder. Literally get away with murder because their daddy was rich. Like, there's no lesson there.
I feel like I can see the lessons in these shorts, and you just kind of, like, skate right by them. But I think the lesson in here is definitely that you shouldn't idolize anyone. If somebody is famous, they're still a person and subject to the same sick desires and actions that any of us are. So look at every person on the same level instead of putting them on a pedestal.
But they wanted to be on a pedestal.
Well, yeah.
That's the only reason they existed and worked.
They wanted to be on a pedestal. They went and worked so that they could get pussy. But what I'm saying is the psychiatrist held them on a higher level.
No, he saw them as a meal ticket.
But he grew up watching them as a child, and he looked to exploit their fame.
Exploit.
He was holding them up on a higher level rather than treating them as an individual and assessing their issue like he should.
I don't know. It feels like a pretty big stretch for this one.
I think you are ridiculous. And if we had more time and weren't trying to keep this under an hour, I would tear you 5 new assholes.
You have like a whole 12 minutes.
Well, we're trying to keep it under an hour as much as we can. So, I mean, Darian's letting us flood his feed. The least we can do is try to keep it as concise as possible. All right. So, episode rating, I would give this one a 2.
I'd give it a 1, just because I don't want to give it a 0, because there might be worse.
All right. Yeah, so thank you for joining us today for this 31 Days of Halloween episode. Join us tomorrow for, what is tomorrow?
October 7th,
okay.
October 7th.
We're going to be covering 2 more episodes. Thanks for joining us again. Bye-bye. Oh, we're closing out with the Monsters intro. Yeah, the intro to the Monster Show.
I think they probably get that now.
Maybe.
Honey, it's family hour. There must be something on.
Oh!
Oh, great! It's Monsters, our favorite show!
Shh! It's starting!